Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. Hi, I am the living legend, Sinbad, and I'm joined by Chris the Brain Contreras. How are you doing, Contreras?
I'm doing fantastic.
Do you like my awesome, awful Monday Nitro beginning joke?
Yes, it was very fun.
Yeah, whatever. All right, we have a lot to talk about today, man. We just talked about the wackiness of Halloween Havoc 1995, which was quite the show. Everybody should check it out. That's where we left off last week. And this week, we are going into the Nitro the night after. And first thing I want to mention is we have a chat open. If anybody wants to check it out, it's superfriendsuniverse.com/chat. Not many people are in here right now, but, you know, whatever. People may show up. People download the show as well. Also, check out superfriendsuniverse.com to download our shows. So be sure to check that out. But, all right, so it's the night after Halloween Havoc, 1995, and the Giants had just won the world title. But we find that out on this show. So explain that a little bit.
Well, basically what it was is Jimmy Hart was turning on Hulk Hogan in the main event of Halloween Havoc. And so he put in the... You know, every once in a while they'll do the clause where, you know, if the champion gets DQ'd, he loses the title. So he puts that clause in there, knowing he's going to turn on him and get Hogan disqualified, and which is always kind of silly to me when the, you know, the manager's turning. I mean, when the manager's obviously turned on the guy, why do you call it disqualification for, you know, the guy that's getting turned on? Kind of silly, but whatever. And, yeah, so he got disqualified. We find out the next night about this clause in the contract, and... supposedly the Giants are the new world champion, but outcomes like one of the – was that this week or was that like Nitro the next week? I can't remember if they announced it.
It really doesn't matter. I mean, it's either this week or the week after.
Yeah. Anyway, one of the attorneys for WCW comes out and says because of how it happened that the Giants are not the world champion, so the title's held up and they're going to have the – big three-ring 60-man battle royal at World War III for the championship.
Yes, that actually was the week after, I believe. That's what happened. So, I mean, it's a huge deal that, you know, that happened at all. You know, that they changed the title supposedly on DQ, and then
they held the title.
Yes, Hogan did not have to lose, of course. You know, he didn't lose 1-2-3 like you'd expect him to. You know, he got DQ'd on the title because of Hogan's not going to get pinned. So now they are building up for World War III, which this is the first time they ever did this pay-per-view. And
should have been the last.
Yes. Yeah, the Royal Rumble every year for the WWF or WWE was like a really big deal because it was like their biggest buy rate, or not biggest buy rate, but like one of the biggest shows of the year. It might have been second biggest buy rate or third at the time, but I mean it was still a big pay per view that everybody looked forward to. So
yeah,
instead
because
of having everybody,
the matches were usually always good. I mean, you know, every once in a blue moon you get like a bad Royal Rumble match, but usually they were all pretty good.
Yeah, so WCW's way of, you know, countering this is their own Battle Royal show, which is World War III. The Royal Rumble has 30 people in it. World War III had 60 people in it. And while WCW had a lot of people under contract, a lot of those people you never really considered, you know, marquee people. And we'll get to that in a second. We'll, you know, say some people that were in there. But let's just work on this Nitro that was the night after.
Okay, let's start with one of my big pet peeves I think more WCW did this more than anything else. Okay, so they start the show, and you know they're live, they're on the air, and they say, later on when the footage gets here, we'll have footage from Halloween Havoc. I said, why is the footage just now en route when you have all your production trucks already there? That always bothers me. You know when they do stuff like that and they say, the footage is being delivered. It's not here yet. We've got our $1 million setup here in the back with all these trailers, you know, beaming the satellite and everything like that, but we don't have the tape from our pay-per-view the previous evening.
Even though all those trucks came from the pay-per-view, they didn't bring the tape. They've actually put the tape in this guy named Ron's truck, and Ron has to drive it in his truck to the next town. And
I guess he wanted to watch it in the hotel that night, and something like that.
And he overslept.
Another one was, you know, they would have the one of my other ones was they'd have the tape. They say the match last night was so controversial that a judge is reviewing the film, and then we'll get the tape on its way. So I guess Judge Wagner would be able to. Like a municipal court judge or something like that. I guess Judge Wagner is supposed to know how to rule professional wrestling matches or something like that. I don't know.
It's so controversial that a judge has to look at it.
The commissioner of WCW can't make a ruling on it. He's, you know, superseded by Judge Wagner or somebody.
Yes. I mean, honest to God, I'm surprised they didn't say, like, you know, the President of the United States has gotten a hold of this footage and he will not release it until he reviews it himself. But, you know,
we're gonna show you footage later in the show. People will stick around.
yes, people will. But, I mean, they had to make up an elaborate story in order to keep people around for it, which that's okay. You know, it's just
I guess
it just
sounds
really
stupid. It just sounds so stupid to me.
Yeah, it's just pretty goofy. All right, so they have Ric Flair, Pillman, Arn Anderson come out. And they had formed what is going to become the Four Horsemen. And it was one of those things you kind of saw coming. Well, eventually it was very evident, like the day of the show, it was very evident what was going to happen. But the weeks coming up to it, like, I didn't really know exactly that it was going to happen. The actual day of the show when Flair was injured.
Yeah.
Of course, I was a child, so, and you're an adult. So
yeah,
I could
just see it coming just because of the way they were doing it. You know, I could see what was going to happen.
And one good thing about these, like, the next series of Nitros, where there were a pair of matches between Scott Norton and the Shark that I always thought were, like, really underrated matches. I actually went back and watched them. Scott Norton eventually wins the second one. But, like, I always liked when the two, like, big bulls would, you know, go ahead to each other. And the Shark, of course, the late John Penta. Like, I always thought he was really good, like, better than people thought he was.
Yeah,
and
I thought he was better as Earthquake in the WWF. Just, you know, just like a big monster heel. And, you know, I mean, you make him the Shark, and I don't know, it's just kind of, it's just a little bit too much comedy for me to take seriously, so.
Well, one of the things about the Shark that I preferred, to be honest, or Avalanche, he didn't talk as much. And Earthquake, I never bought, like, I liked when he had a manager, because his accent is so thick Canadian.
Yeah,
like, he always sounded so funny when he talked, you know what I mean? Like, his accent was so thick that I didn't, you know, I was kind of laughed at it. And another thing that's, you know, big about the show was Sabu left WCW after being there for about a month or two, right after the show. So this is his last show after, you know, only being there for a month or two.
I wasn't figuring he's going to be there long. He's one of those guys, yeah. He wasn't going to be able to work within the system. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he wouldn't have. And
I love him beating Disco Inferno, because Disco Inferno was just a goof at this time that I hated, so I love seeing, like, the hardcore Sabu go against Disco Inferno.
I was always a Disco Inferno fan. I thought he was really funny.
I liked him better, like, in like 97 when they gave him that TV title run. I really enjoyed that. I gotta tell you,
yeah, it was definitely good stuff. It was.
Plus, he used Steve Austin's finisher, so he got over more.
Yes. Was it the Chart Buster? Was it called?
Yeah, Chart Buster.
Yes. Then Lex Luger and Ming, who had wrestled the night before, beat Mark Bagwell and Scotty Riggs, and they wrestled the night before, you know, and
yeah.
Now they're a team. Now they're aligned because they're both managed by Jimmy Hart, and Lex Luger. This situation, okay, I'll try to explain it. Lex Luger turned on Hogan and Savage, but as you'll learn, you know, the weeks upcoming, he's still friends with Sting because he, like, you know, he didn't attack Sting. He never hurt Sting. He would fight for Sting because he still felt Sting was his friend. He just didn't like Hogan and Savage. So this is like what we touched on last week of the, it's not black and white anymore, it was all shades of gray of the, you know, who's the heel, who's the babyface.
Yeah, and actually made for some pretty good storylines like the next few months, you know, because eventually they'd win the tag titles, but you still didn't know where he stood. And he was still with Jimmy Hart, but still teaming with Sting, still taking on, like, heels and babyfaces. So you never knew what was going to happen. So it was pretty cool.
I thought it was. It was really cool. And at the next taping, which we're obviously building towards World War III, which it's, you know, it's a goofy show. It's a goofy show. Which it's not going to be as goofy as December show, but we'll get there when we get there. They're building up the Giant still to try making him seem like a killer. And he was. He was, you know, he was a killer. And they had Kevin Sullivan beat the Renegade. And the Renegade was another one of those, you know, Hogan wanted him to be like a warrior. He didn't get over. So now they're going to squash him. And losing to Kevin Sullivan is pretty bad. Kevin Sullivan is considered like a mid-card heel, but he's like the leader of the main event heels. But like as a wrestler, no one really bought him as a main eventer. So the Renegade losing to Kevin Sullivan was kind of a blow to the Renegade, don't you think?
Yeah, and you remember afterwards Jimmy Hart stripped him of his face paint and said, "You're not the Renegade anymore, now you're just Rick."
Yes, because Jimmy, oh, that was so great. That was so great. Yeah, because Jimmy Hart was the one that supposedly had found the Renegade. And,
yeah.
Yes, he because Jimmy Hart had just turned heel, so, yeah, he stripped him of his face paint and just called Rick, which was, like, another one of those realistic angles that people could buy into. You know, no one really used real names at the time. It was in 95, it was unheard of. I mean, in WWF at the time, you have, you know, Bret Hart fighting with a pirate over, you know, his leather jacket. And this is, you know, I mean, seriously, this is the reason why WCW was, you know, taking the lead. And I thought that was great. And throw in another good Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit match, which every week they would, like, there was a group of guys that would, you know, they would have a match. And it'd be like Eddie Guerrero, Benoit, Dean Malenko, eventually... Regal would get involved in the mix, and Regal would get in the feud with Fitz Finlay, and there's just a lot of good stuff that's going to be happening on Nitro coming up. But they did this fans vote thing on this episode of you get to pick a match, you know, what match, whatever match you want to have, and of course they voted for Sting versus Ric Flair, which is always going to be a crowd pleaser. So,
yeah, there's throwing stuff out there like, I think, like Big Bubba versus Dave Sullivan and just all these other matches that, you know, nobody would want to see, but they also included Sting versus Flair in there. And so, they were doing the thing where they said Brian Pillman and Arn Anderson are tearing all the phones off the walls so nobody calls in the building to vote for this match. Which is kind of silly, but I guess all the phone calls are coming from the inside of the arena. I don't know.
See, personally, I wanted to see that Big Bubba versus Dave Sullivan match. I don't know about you guys, but, I mean, what a match it could have been.
Well,
and,
I mean, you know, I was a little bit more into Sting's and Flair's issue right now. I know Bubba and Dave Sullivan was probably the bigger potential for to draw money, but I was into Sting and Flair. Just kidding.
Yeah, that's really funny. They taped a week later's Nitro before the Nitro, and they didn't normally tape Nitro at all.
Like one of the only times they did that, I think.
Yes, yes, and they did it this week. And one really funny thing I thought on this show that airs a week after is Benoit, who is not yet in the Horsemen yet. He will be very shortly. But he wrestles Kintsuki Sasaki, and he beats him in like a couple of minutes with a dragon suplex. Just beats him. And then Guerrero fights Johnny B. Badd, ten minute time limit draw, and then Sting beats Dean Malenko. But during the match, they announce that Sting is going to defend the title, his U.S. title, against Kintsuki Sasaki, who had just lost in 2 minutes to Chris Benoit. And it was just so. I mean, why would they do that? I mean, why would
because
they?
Because they were going to switch the title. Because they were going to switch the title.
Yeah, I know,
so.
But why would they have Benoit beat him?
I have no idea. But I do remember.
You know?
Because I think, yeah, I see what you're talking about. But this Benoit Sasaki thing, I do remember at the end of this match, they said he was the newest member of the Four Horsemen, because the week before on Saturday night, they randomly mentioned that the newest Horseman is going to be announced tonight. And just like in a like 3 minute segment, then Arn Anderson introduces Benoit.
So it was, you know, there was really no fanfare in Benoit being added.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't even, unless you heard this thing at the end of this match on Nitro, you wouldn't even known it, probably. It was kind of low-key at the time because they never really had them together, like, too much after this, like, all in the, you know, out together and stuff like that. So,
yeah, not really. And in the meantime, they all went to Japan, and that's why. They're in Japan for a while. And this was, at this time, Bischoff was making the plans for the big WCW New Japan show that's going to be at Starrcade, which is, you know, going to be it's their biggest show of the year, but it ends up being this weird New Japan thing, and we'll get there. But Kintsuki Sasaki beats Sting to win the title, so he's a champ now. He's the U.S. champion going into the Starrcade show that will be happening, you know, right after a month after World War III. So, honestly, nothing really happened except for the week. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say this was the show they announced the next week that Sting and Hogan are going to wrestle for the first time ever.
Because Hogan doesn't know, like a storyline, Hogan doesn't know if he could trust Sting because Sting is still friends with Luger. And Luger is obviously a foe of Hogan. So Sting and Hogan fight, and Sting fights off the Dungeon of Doom, and it's like Sting's with Hogan, but he's also with Luger. So it was just, and I love the end spot to this where the Giant's in the ring, and Sting and Hogan grab a chair, and they like clothesline the Giant over the top rope with the chair. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember. I just maybe being so shocked they were giving this away on TV.
Yes. I mean,
that's to me, it was a bigger match than the Luger match with Hogan, you know, on the second Nitro. I mean.
I mean, Nitro, that was the best thing about it, and that's why we're talking about it right now. Because Nitro
one
was
thing,
the show to watch.
Yeah. One thing that.
I mean, I wouldn't
kind
have missed
it. Yeah, oh, yeah. One thing that kind of pissed me off, let's go back to this Dean Malenko match. And
okay.
Fucking Mongo McMichael is terrible on commentary. He says, look how short Dean Malenko is. Ain't no way he's going to beat Sting. He's too small. Which, while true, maybe,
defeat.
Just totally making him look like a loser. I mean, even maybe it was different if it would be like this big monster heel and a real small guy, and you could say that to like build up the underdog thing. But I mean, Malenko's supposed to be a heel here, and Sting's a babyface. I mean, I know where he obviously never got any training in pro wrestling commentary, but I don't think that's how it's done.
Obviously not. You should know that. Yeah, you could say that about a babyface going against a big heel, but you cannot say it reverse because that looks it makes the heel look weak when he already is going to be booked to lose anyways. Everybody knew Dean Malenko was not going to win that match, so you should have at least made him look strong.
Yeah.
So we're at World War III.
It's also one other thing. It's like when you have, when you have like a baby face or like a heel going after, like I remember this like in 1986, Luger was just coming into the business. He was facing Wahoo McDaniel, like in Florida or something. And went out there and just cut his own promo saying, look how old this guy, he's never going to beat me. And while it's true, it's not best to point that out on like TV because it kind of makes the other guy look like just like an old fart. And then he beat him, so there was no sense in like putting him down like that anyway. So I don't know, it was just, one of those things.
Well, one of the things in wrestling that you should always know is like you want to make the guy you're about to beat look as good as you could possibly make him, because then you're actually beating somebody instead of beating nobody.
Yeah, I mean, like all white Raw, and they got this stuff with Daniel Bryan and Michael Cole. Okay, you beat Daniel Bryan. I just sat here listening for 5 minutes saying how he was a geek and a nerd and he's no good. So you beat the guy. Now what have you done? You know?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's 2010, and they're still making the same mistakes. All right, let's go ahead and head November 26, 1995, to the Norfolk Scope. And this is kind of funny because, a lot of people from the Observer, F4W message board, Hogan comes out. And Dave Meltzer had reported that Randy Savage was hurt, and that the Giant would win World War III. So Hogan calls it a rag sheet and then throws...
Can he burn it?
He burns it along with his black clothes and says that he's with Sting and Savage and said he's not going to wear black clothes anymore, and he's true to his red and yellow. And so... I mean, with the exception of the Battle Royal, without even including the Battle Royal, this, my friends, is a show that, you need to see to believe. We have Johnny B. Badd against DDP, and he had already won the title before, and so, he's just making a title defense. And
so, he got Kimberly when he won.
Yeah, the stipulation is Kimberly goes with Johnny B. Badd now. And Johnny B. Badd, I believe this is very, very close to the end of his WCW career. Maybe a month after this, he's going to be gone?
I believe it was like in March.
Was it in March?
Yeah, because remember when Luger like won the TV title from him? That was like in March.
Yeah, maybe it was March, because I do remember the Schiavone commentary, which we'll get there. Yes. Well, he wins the Diamond Doll, and so Kimberly is now in Johnny B. Badd's corner from now on, from here on out. Big Bubba and Jim Duggan have had this like weird Saturday Night feud for a while, but they put it on pay-per-view, which is cool, because they were just Saturday Night guys pretty much. And they had a taped fist match, and... VK Wall Street ends up coming out and helping Big Bubba. So it's like this early 90s WWF guys having a mid-card match, which is fine with me. It was fine. As long as it's lower mid-card, I didn't have any issues with it happening.
Did you remember the storyline of the Duggan doing the tight fist thing with his grandmother in Ireland, like the tight fist champion over there or something?
His grandmother, right?
I swear they said his grandmother.
His grandmother.
And you should see him apply the...
Duggan.
You should see him when he gets, because it became his gimmick after a while. You know, he'd be in matches and he'd tape the fist, and you just see him tape this fist.
It was so funny. He would tape it maybe two or three times around, which would do nothing except for like maybe soften a blow on somebody. You know,
yeah,
I mean, he didn't really.
It would just be loose tape on his hand. You know.
Yeah, loose tape on his hand. I mean, doing absolutely nothing. It was funny. I mean. I actually enjoyed the gimmick of the loose tape thing going on.
He'd get the tape on his stand, and he'd just sling that roll of tape around like five or six times real quick. And I mean,
Speaking of Jim Duggan, just let me plug real fast. If anybody has a chance to buy the, what's it called, the 1988 timeline from Kayfabe Commentaries, with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. It's really good. It's really good. I finally got a chance to watch it, you know, a day or two ago.
Yeah, I was reading a review of it today.
It was really funny. So all you Hacksaw Duggan fans, be sure to check that one out. Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto wrestled Cutie Suzuki and Mayumi Ozaki at a... it was just like a tag match, and it was actually a pretty good match. And they had Mike Tanay come out to do commentary, and I always liked when they would do that with you know, the foreign wrestlers or even like the luchadors that would eventually come in. They would have Tanay come out, like it was like a special treat to have him out there to describe the moves because Shivani couldn't do it.
Yeah, he was like the international guy. You know, they brought him in to call that Win Worlds Collide pay-per-view back in 94 because they didn't have anybody else that could do it. And I think this was kind of the start on, you know, when they would bring the international guys in like several months later, and he'd come out there for a match every once in a while, and that pretty much transitioned him into being one of the full-time commentators. And he was awesome back then. I mean, he's like,
he was really,
you know how
good.
JR knows everything about football? Like, you know, when he's calling a match, you know, tonight knew everything about the international scene. And he was awesome.
And it was great. It was really great. And it was actually very interesting to have as part of their commentary team, because WWF at the time had nothing like it.
Yeah.
Had nothing like it. And the new U.S. champion, Kintsugi Sasaki, beat Chris Benoit, which I guess it makes sense because Benoit had just beaten him. And... like, it's kind of weird with the whole build-up to the Starrcade the month later. The only thing that Sonny Ono would talk about, who was the manager of Kintsugi Sasaki, was that, you know, because, like, it was a couple weeks before this, they had a lot of the talent on Worldwide, but then they got kicked off. And can you explain this a little bit better?
To be honest, I can't, because I vaguely remember it. I remember they did a spell where they were doing, like, it was like all Japanese guys on WC Worldwide for a while, wasn't it?
No. It was Sonny Ono would bring in the Japanese guys to wrestle there, and something happened where, you know, someone came out and kicked them out, and it was just this weird, it was almost like a weird, you know, reasoning for it, and then they finally just, Sonny Ono just kind of like briefly said that they're allowed to be on Worldwide again, and that they said that something's going out for Starrcade. So it was very odd.
Yeah, I might not have seen it just because I don't think I was watching Worldwide much back then, because, you know, they just got Nitro, and I pretty much get my feel on that, and then like on Saturday night, so I wasn't even watching Worldwide.
Oh, yeah. You were an adult. I was a kid. So, I mean, Saturday night for you could have been out, you know, or, you know, you could have been nursing a hangover. I went to bed at 9 o'clock, so.
Yes.
So I was for sure up at 8 a.m. ready to watch some wrestling. And Luger beats Randy Savage with an arm bar. And, and it was, like, considered a knockout. And that's what they ruled. They ruled it a knockout.
No,
and
I was
the picture of it, it was this weird, weak-looking armbar. And I thought it looked so – I'm sorry for interrupting. But, it looked so weak, like, even on the pay-per-view. But the uncensored poster for the next year in WCW Magazine actually had Luger doing that armbar to Macho Man Savage.
I just remember about this match. Hogan went off on this tirade about Savage not being hurt, and he submits to an armbar.
Yes.
I mean, that was... It was like, you're so full of shit. I mean...
Well, no. Hogan was saying that Savage is not real hurt, you know what I mean? But he could be worked hurt. In the terms of a wrestling show, he could be fake hurt. But he's not really hurt, you know? Not the dirt sheets. The dirt sheets don't know anything.
Well, see, this was at a time... I mean, I was older than you, but I wasn't even an inside fan back then. So, you know, I could barely make out what he was talking about, just saying that Savage's arm wasn't hurt. But then, whether real or fake, because I couldn't tell the difference between any of them back then, because I didn't really know how the business worked on the shoot side at the time. So that's why I thought that.
I didn't know anything. I didn't know any difference, obviously, then either. I just learned the stuff, you know, way later. And you just...
Yeah, I mean, I feel sorry for the people, like, you know, when they've had all these storylines with, like, Sting and Nash for these last few weeks. And if you're not an inside fan, you don't even know what the fuck you're talking about. And even if you aren't an inside fan, you're not really sure.
Yeah, you really don't know what's going on. You really don't know. Okay. All right, so World War III, the match. All right, well, Sting also beat Ric Flair over the Scorpion Deathlock.
I think this was the same match they had on Nitro.
Yeah, it was almost, I was just going to say that, like move for move almost. It was a very similar match. It didn't need to be on the pay-per-view because they just had it on Nitro, you know, 2 weeks before. All right, so World War III, the match, it's not just a battle royal. It's a three-ring battle royal. And for this first one, they actually had three commentary teams. For each ring, one for each ring. And some of the commentary, you could tell that they didn't have that many headsets because you know what I'm talking about? Like, some of them just, like, pretty much held microphones. And it was just...
Let's make it more of a clusterfuck. Let's add three announce teams.
Yes, and, I mean, they even had, like, they had guys like Chris Cruz as one of the announcers, you know? Like, no one will be Chris Cruz on commentary, but like we said, there's 60 guys, and they have a lot of people under contract, but here's the list of the people in there. And remember, this is for the WCW World title. So here are the contenders. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and just list them all. Why not? Scott Armstrong, Steve Armstrong, Arn Anderson, Johnny B. Badd, Mark Bagwell. All right, first off, with the exception of Arn Anderson, none of those guys would ever even be contender. Benoit, Big Train Bart. Who
Big,
was
Train
Big Train Bart,
Bart? We probably don't even know who I'm talking about, but he was like a Black Bart. Do you remember the Desperados promos in 91?
Yes.
He was one of the
Big
Desperados. It was Black Bart and Dutch Mantel and Dead Eye Dick were the Desperados.
No, I remember the Desperados, but why don't I remember Big Train Bart? Was he just
like
a worldwide jobber?
Yeah, worldwide Saturday night.
Okay. Bunkhouse Buck, Cobra, Disco, Jim Duggan, Bobby Eaton, Ric Flair, The Giant, Eddie Guerrero, Hogan, Mr. JL, Canyon, Knobs, Kurosawa, Luger, Joey Maggs, Ming, Hugh Morris, Max Muscle, Scott Norton, Orndorff, DDP, Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, Brian Pillman, Pitbull Pittman, Stevie Ray, Lord Regal, Scotty Riggs, Road Warrior Hawk, Big Bubba, Jerry Sags, Ricky Santana, Kintsuki Sasaki, The Shark, Fidel Sierra, which, by the way, was one of my favorite jobbers just because of the way he looked. He was hilarious. Dirty Dick, Slater, Mark Starr, Sting, Dave Sullivan, Kevin Sullivan, Super Assassin 1, Assassin 2, Booker T, Dave Taylor, which I think this might have been Dave Taylor, one of his first appearances, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was.
He was considered the Great Britain Heavyweight Champion, Dave Taylor. So they wanted to make him seem bigger than he was because no one knew who he was. Hard Work Bobby Walker, VK Wall Street, Pistol Pez Watley, Mike Winter, Alex Wright, James Earl Wright, the Yeti, and the Zodiac. Okay, let's talk about the Yeti. The Yeti, the Yeti at Halloween Havoc was a mummy, right? He was a mummy, but his name was the Yeti.
Yeah.
Well, World War III, he dressed as a, it was a ninja, right?
Yeah, it was a ninja outfit. He has like this you know, kind of like the Great Muta had those loose fitting pants that he always wore, and
yes,
he had like, and the Yeti had like sneakers on or something like that.
So, I mean, they didn't, like, the main event of the pay-per-view before this, they were building this guy up as this big monster. And now they completely changed his mimic, or his gimmick. It did not even change his name. They didn't change, it's still the Yeti, but now he's Ninja. And
I don't think I ever saw him again after this.
No, you don't see him ever again. Because I think they decided, wow, this man's a ninja now. And, you know, what can you do? Really, what can he do?
Yeah.
Well, the finish of the match was the Giant gets eliminated. And then there's like a wasn't it on the pay-per-view where they made it look all scratched up, like the feed went out?
Actually, I think it was when they replayed it the next night. So they edited that in, like, the next night, I believe.
Okay, okay. Because I didn't actually
remember
see the title until the next night.
Yeah, because I remember they were showing footage from the night before, and then when the end of the match, when the Giant goes out, then what is it? The Giant grabs Hogan by the leg and pulls him under the ropes. So
under the ropes.
And the refs see it. The refs didn't see it, but then they turn around and see Hogan on the floor. They call that an elimination. So then Savage dumps the one man gang out, and so the Savage wins the title. But when but on the thing on Nitro, when the Giant pulled him out, that's when it got, like, all staticky. I don't know.
So it made it look like they edited the footage then.
Yeah.
Yes, which, like, if you think about it, they edited this footage supposedly, so they couldn't overturn the decision. You know, and so Macho Man's the champion now.
And about a match you don't need to have, like, a screw job ending in.
Yeah, Battle Royal. I mean, who cares? What if Hogan had 30 people gang up on him and throw him over the top rope? That does not make him look bad, you know? He's just...
it's like in a ladder match or something. I think it's so stupid when guys interfere, like, they're not even in the match, interfere for the finish. And so the ladder matches, nobody's really doing a job. It's like a match where, like, a heel can win, like, straight up, and it doesn't hurt the babyface. Stuff like that I hate.
Yes, because there's things that you could do in that match, you know, like the heel could hit you in the face with a chair and climb up and win the title, and he still used the chair to win, but he won the match fair. There does not need to be interference in a ladder match.
Yeah.
all right, so the next night on Nitro, it opens up with Johnny B. Badd against DDP, and the finish is Kimberly threw a chain to Johnny B. Badd to knock out DDP. But the thing that's weird about this was the night before, there was a chain that was used in the Jim Duggan match with Big Bubba, like, which is almost like a very similar finish involving a chain with two different storylines. And
yeah.
Why would they have two chains? I don't know. It was like there was such a generic finish twice, but, you know, what can he do?
I don't know why we still ask these questions, why they do stuff. Why do we still ask these questions?
Because we do. Because we love WCW, that's why.
But it's because it's just so fun to it's fun to poke fun at stuff like that. So.
Yes, yes. They had the same women's tag match with the same winners the next night. I honestly do not remember this match at all. I just remember the pay-per-view.
I think it's probably pretty much the same match.
Yeah, definitely. Sure it was. Hogan beats Hugh Morris, which, as you can see, there's never really any jobber matches on Nitro, and this is the best part about Nitro. And Sting and Luger beat Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. And Flair comes out and rams Luger's head into the steel ring post. And then Hogan makes a save for Luger, but then goes after Luger. So it's like this weird hate triangle.
yeah,
but I mean, it's a good storyline.
I think he was making the save for Sting more than he was for Luger. That's probably what it was.
Yes, I guess you could say that. But, I mean, he still made the save for the both of them.
Yeah.
And the dungeon did nothing to help Luger at all right here. But it's starting to heat up a little bit between those two teams. Yeah, not necessarily heat up, but, like, you know, they're going to have a little bit of dissension between them because of the attacks, you know, back and forth to each other. And it'll be within the next 6 months, of course, that, you know, you'll see a little bit of violence between them two, I guess. The next pay-per-view that we're getting ready for is New Japan versus WCW. And explain how it all happened. Like, why it's happening.
I can't remember, to be honest.
Oh, really?
I really can't remember. I don't think they built the show up much. They just maybe mentioned it, like, maybe just once a week. But, I mean, was there, other than, like, Worldwide or WCW Pro, I don't think there was any, like, really build-up on Nitro about this.
There was none. There was none.
It was just build-up for the triangle match to get into the title match. That's the only build it had, I believe.
That is the only build, really, that was on Nitro. But on Saturday night, they would kind of do these little segments where Sonny Ono would come out and say that they were going to win the Best of Seven series, and, you know, they would have controlling interest in WCW and how, you know, this is proving that New Japan was better and all. But the thing is, it was so on the back burner that no one found it believable because it didn't get any Monday Nitro time, and that was their main show. It was so stupid. It was so stupid. I did not like that at all. I really did not like that at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. Whatever. All right, so we're going to the Nitro after World War III. And, oh, no, it's 2 weeks later, actually.
Yeah.
It was in Arizona, I believe. And Scott Norton at this time wasn't a babyface, and he wasn't a heel. He was just a guy. And I loved him at this time until he – doesn't he eventually join up with the Dungeon of Doom? No. He
joined the NWO.
Yeah, he joined the NWO eventually. But,
yeah.
I mean, until then – I mean, he really would just be like a guy that would wrestle in matches, and he would either wrestle a heel or a babyface, and most of the time lose this match. So they weren't really doing much with Scott Norton. But I just wanted to note that he was all over these shows, and it seemed like, you know, almost every week he'd be on these shows and doing pretty much nothing, you know.
Yeah. He's probably a pal of Bischoff's, to be honest with you, being from from Minnesota, might be why he's getting so much time on these shows.
Yes. I mean, I really don't know.
They just didn't
really
have him doing
know.
Anything but just random matches.
Yeah, but he was getting paid. Luger wrestled Randy Savage on the Nitro, and they're still doing a storyline involving Hogan, Flair, Savage, Luger, Sting, where they're all against each other, but some of them are aligned with each other. But, like, you wouldn't think, like, Sting's aligned with Hogan, of course, and Sting's also aligned with Luger, and Luger's kind of loosely involved with Flair, I guess, because they're both heels also. But Luger's also a babyface, too. And, I mean, not necessarily, but, I mean, when he's with Sting, he's a babyface.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, it's so confusing. And so the next week in the main event, it's Hogan and Sting against Flair and Arn Anderson. And after the match, Brian Pillman and Luger, they attack Hogan. And not Sting. Like Luger.
Yeah, it says they attacked Hogan and Sting on here, but I believe that's incorrect.
No. I know. I remember it distinctly. He just attacks Hogan, and he didn't help Sting for some reason. But then Savage made the save because Luger was just going after Hogan, and then Savage was accidentally hit by Sting in this. So more dissension with this, and you know, Savage is the world champion right here.
Yeah.
He's the current world champion. So they announced that there's a triple threat match for Starrcade, and it's going to be Sting versus Ric Flair versus Luger. And the winner of that triple threat match would immediately get a title shot at Ric Flair or at Randy Savage for the title. So that's built up for Starrcade, and that's the match that they build up the most for all of Starrcade, because there's no undercard, really, with the exception of guys wrestling New Japan guys. So there's no other storylines really going on. I mean, honestly, like, Nitro, the end of the year, with the exception of some great things that happen that you'll hear about, you know, it's, you know, there's not much going on. And
yeah.
Alundra Blaze, who's Medusa, shows up on the Nitro, I believe it was the week before Starrcade.
Yeah.
And she had just wrestled a couple weeks before, probably, on the Survivor Series. She had Japanese partners, and she went up against an all-Japanese team, and she ended up losing to Aja Kong. And they're building up, like, kind of an Alundra Blaze, Aja Kong match, I think, for the WWF Women's title, because she lost clean, you know, pretty much the back fist of Aja Kong.
Yeah,
well,
I actually saw a graphic for Aja Kong and Alundra Blaze, like, for Royal Rumble that January.
Yes. So they're building up this match, but did her contract run out, or did she just get fired?
I think her contract just ran out, and they were getting rid of the women's title, so, you know, they kinda...
Yeah, so she showed up and throws, like, she badmouths WWF and throws the women's title in the garbage can.
Yeah.
Yes. Which, a real funny story is she doesn't want to go in the WWF Hall of Fame, according to an interview she recently did, because she never lost the title. Well, dumb shit, it's because you threw it in the garbage can on WWE Nitro.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
and now they did away with that title, so are you still really the champion of something? The champion of a big championship. So, I don't know.
Yes.
Although they've done some
stuff
on the website with her, like some Where Are They Now stuff. So, if Wendy Richter can come back for the Hall of Fame, I don't see why Medusa can't.
Yeah, I'm sure she will, but I mean, with that stipulation, you know, what can you really do? I mean, there's no way they're going to do that. I mean, I would.
They
at
could
least...
build it up. They could promote it as like one of the big moments in the Monday Night Wars. Because at the time, even though it was still new, I mean, the Monday Night Wars, it was still like a pretty big thing that happened. So, I mean, there's talk of Lex Luger getting in next year. If he can get in, surely she can. They'll run out of people soon enough where they're going to need people like her, you know, come in every year and do a speech or something. So.
All right, we actually have there was a question on the board. There was someone that wanted to know about the Paul Orndorff attack by the Horsemen.
When
exactly was that?
Okay, this was the week before.
It was the week before.
Yeah, it was Paul Orndorff beat Disco Inferno with the Pile Driver. Then he goes to the dressing room, and then the Horsemen come out. And I think this is really where Pillman started the loose cannon deal, because he starts going off saying how bad this is going for Noble. And he said, well, let's not forget about the guy that just wrestled, so, like saying he's a shell of his former self. And then Orndorff comes back out and said, like, that Flair and Arn had made an offer to him to be one of the Horsemen, but he said he didn't want to be a part of the gang or didn't want anything to do with it. And then Pillman said something else that really pissed him off. So he just, like, grabs him and throttles him and jumps on top of him, starts beating him up. And, of course, Flair and Arn pull him off, and then they get, like, a plate pile driver on the floor. And this was his last match, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that was it.
He was going to get neck surgery, so that's why they did this. And they kind of sold it kind of cool because Bobby Heenan left the broadcast booth to check on him. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, I do. I just wasn't sure which week it was. But I remember they would show it. Actually, I didn't know about it because I missed this Nitro. And I didn't know what had happened. I remember seeing the whole, you know, like they kind of showed like a flashback to it of like, yeah, them attacking Orndorff. And I didn't really know what was going on. And so they, you know, they showed it. And so I, like, actually, when I got my WCW stuff, I actually actively seeked out finding that. And I did, and it was so great. Yeah. Oh, so we have.
Actually, the Nitro we were covering a couple of minutes ago. That's like they take two shows this night, so that's not the week before.
Okay. Yeah, that confused me a little bit. Yeah, cause they taped that the week before, and you know, I don't know. It was just like a little interesting storyline. So let's go ahead and get to Starrcade, because there's really nothing else of note
I just see this result from 12-25, the Zodiac beat Disco Inferno on Nitro. You know something's bad when you listen to the damn Zodiac.
The whole Zodiac, just anything involving him was just so, I don't know, it was so bad.
The only good thing cool about him was when they had the submission on him in the War Games, and he kept saying no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, and they didn't know how to call the match. Finally,
that was
funny. They just took one of the yeses and said the match is over.
All right. So the story of this pay-per-view is a best of seven, New Japan versus WCW. The first match is Jushin Liger versus Benoit in a great match. And he beat Benoit. So New Japan is up 1-2, WCW's nothing. And this was the beginning of, like I was saying earlier, where Chris Benoit and Kevin Sullivan were starting this feud of, even though they were both heels, they just didn't like each other. And there was a lot going on between them, and it was weird because Kevin Sullivan's the WCW guy, and you know he helped WCW lose that match, which is weird.
Well, they didn't build the series up enough to where somebody interfering on the other side was going to matter, you know.
Yeah, of course. Koji Kanemoto beat Alex Wright in a forgettable match, which I remember when I was young, I always just thought that everybody from Japan was just automatically good because they were Japanese. And
yeah.
I was not at all impressed with this match. Then Luger for WCW beat Masachono with the torture rack, which was such a – Masachono was such like a star from New Japan. And like it's just so funny that he's on the mid-card match, you know, jobbing to Lex Luger.
What's funny about some of these matches on this show, it's so strange. You got Luger, Sting, and Savage all in this World Cup, but they still got a wrestle coming up.
Yes, yeah, so they could have anybody. Why couldn't Disco Inferno wrestle Masachono?
Why couldn't they throw like a Dean Malenko or somebody in here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whatever. Johnny B. Badd defeated a way old and way out of shape Masa Saito via DQ when he threw Johnny B. Badd over the top rope. And, because this is one of the rules of this thing, what a horrible match this was. And, I mean, he looked so old at the time. I mean, so old and just out of shape, and he was, he was really fat at
yeah.
the time. And I always thought that they would have set their best for this, but, you know, there's whatever. I don't know. Shinjiro Otani beat Guerrero in either the best or the second best match of the night. And it was actually put on the Eddie Guerrero DVD. So, I mean, it was a great match. Then Randy Savage beat Tenzan, so they tied it up. And then Sting beat Kintsugi Sasaki, who was the U.S. champion. And
I guess they just had to get him his win back from Japan.
Yes, they had to give him his win back from Japan. And then Flair beat Luger and Sting in a triple threat match. But because he won by countout, and Sting
yeah.
was trying to get back in the ring, and Luger held on to Sting's arm to, like, keep him from going back in.
Yeah, and we're supposed
and
to think
like,
it's because he's trying to help him up. He needs help to get up or something.
Oh, he needs help to get up?
Yeah, because Luger was down. Then when he saw Sting about to go back in the ring, he kind of grabbed his hand. And, on his side, it was played up like, you know, he was trying to pull himself up, needed Sting's help. But you could kind of see that he was trying to get Sting counted out. So that's kind of what the story was with that.
And it was good. It was good stuff.
Yeah.
So Flair beat Sting and Luger, and then he wrestled Randy Savage, and he beat him, and he had one of those full-on crimson masks at the time. Boy,
I think
was
this
he bloody.
The first time we saw anybody bleeding in WCW since, like, those Nasty Boys Cactus Jack matches in 94.
Yeah, it had been quite a while. But it was certainly great. It was certainly great. And
God, he was just covered in it.
Yes.
No
right.
Hogan on
so,
the show.
No Hogan. Hogan was nowhere to be seen on the show. Biggest show of the year. And Hogan was not even, I don't even think he was talked about, was he?
I think, didn't they do like a suspension angle with him? Where he attacked
yes,
the giant
was,
with, like, a chair or something, and he got suspended the rest of the year?
Yeah. I'm sure that's what it was. He probably just wanted to take a vacation. He was the biggest show of the year, but, you know, whatever.
You know what it probably was? He probably saw all these Japanese guys on here and said, this pay-per-view ain't going to draw any money. So he just took off and, you know, didn't even want to try to get a little pay-per-view cut here. He probably thought these guys weren't going to draw anyway, so who cares?
All right, so one thing I do want to mention is in a dark match, the one-man gang beat Kintsugi Sasaki to win the title with a splash. Then after the match, they restarted it, and Kintsugi Sasaki won the match and retained the title. But they must have had some sort of dispute with Kintsugi Sasaki because then he left, and they showed footage of that one-man gang match of him just winning the title. And then that was it. He was the U.S. champion. And it was very weird because One Man Gang had been back for about a month, maybe?
Yeah.
He was not even over at all. I mean, he was like a number 10 heel, maybe. And all of a sudden, he was the United States champion.
Yeah. Very weird.
I mean, yeah.
It's weird they had this match after the pay-per-view. I mean, you couldn't wait until the next night on Nitro. Or something.
I guess not. All right, we actually have a call. Area code 813. What is going on?
What's up, yo? It's D.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. I was listening to the show. I love this time period. I you know, at the time I didn't like the time periods before this one, but I specifically picked up these Nitros first because it reminded me of a, you know, of a better era. No, I wanted to real quick talk about something that I noticed about this time period is that they would have, like, on Nitro, they would give away a lot of really good matches, but what I thought was fascinating was that they wouldn't always do, like, superstar versus superstar, because I remember there was a match, right, between Dean Malenko and David Sammartino. David Sammartino from WrestleMania 1, and the dude could still work pretty good. And I remember they gave away a lot of good, like, it was weird because they were basically jobber matches, but they were competitive jobber matches. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was interesting. And they weren't boring either.
No. I mean, I really liked that. I liked those competitive lower card guy matches. And that was, you know, WCW had, they had an edge, you know? They did. They just had an edge over the WWF at the time. And it was, you know, it really showed. It really definitely showed.
Do you think that maybe they had too much TV, though? I mean, because this was when they had Pro Worldwide and Saturday Night. So you had, like, what, 2, 4, 6 hours of TV a week? That's a lot of TV.
Well, they had that at the main event. They had Thunder eventually. I mean, this was nothing compared to what they eventually had. And
well, you could see
there's too much TV.
You could see their focus was more on Nitro because the other shows started to drop off when it came to what they were doing on those shows.
Yeah, they would have, like, it's pretty funny because you had a guy like Greg Valentine who has always been, like, an upper-tier or mid-card guy, like, and he would be wrestling, like, Marty Jannetty on Saturday night. I mean, it seemed like they would literally, like, sign anybody. Like, everybody talks about how TNA would sign anybody. Like, if this was WCW, TNA would have already had, like, Benjamin Haas, fucking Funaki. Like, they signed anybody who was not with WWF. It was so weird.
Signing, like, weird people later on, like Chris Adams and, like, Nord the Barbarian or somebody like that. Or, like, Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom, they were just signing them. Just to sign them, I guess.
Chris Adams feuded with Barry Darso on Saturday night, I think.
Well,
right?
There's a reason for that. Like, eventually Jimmy Hart was running Saturday night, and a lot of those guys were friends with him, so they would get jobs through him. And, I mean, there's no way they were making a lot of money. Like, those lower card guys, they were just, you know, WCW just wanted to fill up talent because when they added more shows, these guys had guaranteed contracts of X amount of dates. And if they, you know, hit that, they didn't want to work more. And so they had to get other wrestlers to work those jobs. I mean, a lot of people say the similarities between TNA and WCW and to me, it's apples and oranges when it comes to a lot of the big picture stuff. Like WCW had a lot of bad business people, and that's what happened to them. They had too many leaders of a ship, and that's why. And TNA, it's the same guys. It's Vince Russo and Dixie Carter. And those are the people that control TNA, and they just make bad decisions for bad decisions, but it's only them doing it. So their idiocy is not like WCW, because WCW had a bunch of different bosses, a bunch of different people in charge. The executive, you know, big executives would quit out of nowhere, and they would just throw random people in the spots. So WCW was kind of like, you know, that way because of the management issues. It was because of management, and that's why they went downhill, because no one was really run, like Vince McMahon runs WWF. Everybody, or WWE, everybody knows that. It's all Vince. And that's why, you know, it's always, even if it gets bad, it's still controlled, and people know what's going on. But TNA, they don't know the difference between good and bad. They don't, and they just do not know that. It's not a management thing, or it is a management thing, but it's the same managers just making a bunch of bad decisions.
It's also, you know, the thing about WWE is knowing that Vince is the boss and they know he's not gonna take any crap from anybody. You know, a lot of them, they can't go in there acting like they did in these other companies. You know, when Scott Steiner came in the WWF, like in 2000, 2002. You never heard a bad word about him. You always heard bad stuff about him in WCW because he could get away with it. But he knew who the boss was in WWF, so and knew that shit wasn't going to fly, so you know, he kind of straightened his act up a little bit.
What I never got, and let me see if you guys probably know, because I haven't read the observers from this time period, but when you look back, though, at this time, right, I don't know who the real boss was, right? Because, Bischoff was allegedly the boss, right? But was he the booker? Because I remember, if you ask different people, right, one person will say it was Kevin Sullivan, one person will say it was Mike Graham. Like, who really was the guy who put the television together? I mean, I know you're right, Jimmy Hart did Saturday Night, but Nitro, like, was that just Bischoff and Kevin Sullivan, or was it Bischoff, Sullivan, and Mike Graham? They never really, like, I've never gotten the answer to that question.
I don't think anybody knows, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, the guy in charge, for the most part, at least during his era, was Bischoff. And, you know, when they call him ATM Eric, they call him that for a reason. Because he would hand out big money contracts to a lot of different people. But the actual, he would hire bookers to handle these things. But, I mean, if you really had to see who really was in charge, it was Hogan. And, I mean, that's at the end of the day, Hogan had to be happy with absolutely everything. So, I mean,
I know that, but I meant more so who was booking the matches. Like, what I'm trying to say is, for example, Malenko. Okay, so Kevin Sullivan was booking the matches. So, basically, the way the process would work, correct me if I'm wrong, first of all, Bischoff would come up with the major angles, him and Hogan, and then Sullivan would book all the undercard angles and feuds, and then they would put it together. Is that kind of how it was? I never understood that.
No. I thought it was just Sullivan came up with everything, and Sullivan would come up with good stuff for Hogan. Not good stuff, necessarily, but good
stuff that he would
for
like.
that he would like. I mean, that was always my understanding. I mean, have you ever read Brian's book before, D?
Yeah, man. That was how I even found out about Figure Four anyways, was reading the book. That was way before. I think that was right as the website came out.
Yeah, so
I think that
book...
That Kevin Sullivan, he would be the one to write, like, the TVs, and he's writing the TVs, but you have people that's going to see what's written for them. Then they're going to go to Eric to bitch about what they got to do and get it changed. I kind of think
that's
how it works.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have, they'd come in for TVs, and they'd have this big board with all the matches listed.
If somebody didn't like what they were doing,
they would erase it. Ric Flair came in one day, saw he was supposed to work against Finley, and knew Finley had a reputation being a little bit stiff. He just raced the thing off the board. and they're so stupid, they didn't even notice the problem. You know?
Here's what I think is weird about that, about this, that very thing. Like, how can they communicate with, like, Craig Leathers? If there's all these changes going on, right, because WWE is a lot easier to understand. Right, they come up with the script, the final draft. Everybody gets a copy of it. Michael Cole, Kevin Dunn. So Kevin Dunn knows when to cue Cena's music, when to cue, you know, Orton's music, whatever. But in WCW, if you're making all these changes, like, do they just quickly tell Craig Leathers, okay, we're changing it, cue up this guy's music? Like, that was, I always found that kind of, like, I don't know, strange.
Well, I mean, cueing
you know
music production-wise, the least of their issues. I mean, the production messed up 1,000 times. I mean, that you had to have known that. I mean, there's so many production glitches on Nitros, live Nitros, especially towards the end, that it was embarrassing. I mean, some of the thing. I mean, and the production guy for WCW, who's also the production guy for TNA, it's not because of the writing. It's because he's just an idiot. He's really bad, and the fact that he's kept the job for 20 years, it boggles my mind.
I'm surprised because, you know, you see so many of those live pay-per-views, and it seems like they always miss something. You know, the camera always seems to miss something important, whether it's a high spot or, you know, something happening in the ring that has to do with the story they're telling, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was just wondering because it was just, I always found it weird how they would make these changes like that. Like, I remember the stories about how Hogan would watch Raw on a TV and then all of a sudden just tell Eric, okay, we're coming out now instead of later. Like, how do you – I just – you know what I mean? And then they're telling, you know, Craig Leathers, okay, we're changing everything. Get the NWO music ready. And that's just – it was just – I just find that weird. You know, I find that unusual that they would just, you know.
Well, it's just – I mean, I honestly I can't give you an answer because I really don't know. But do you have another – oh, sorry.
I bet
go ahead, Katrina.
I was going to say, I bet it got easier when they did the 3 hours Nitros because they were able to have a little bit more time while they were rewriting everything.
Yeah,
that's true.
No, I mean, they had so much time. But we actually have another caller on the line, Big D. So I'm gonna go ahead and take that. But we really appreciate you calling in, of course, man.
No problem. I'll keep listening. Well, I love this era, like I said, and I'll if I have time, I'll call in next week and talk about it. Wait, you guys are before I go. You're covering NWO next week.
It might be the next week. I don't know. It depends on how far we get this week.
Yeah, it depends on how far we get this week. But we actually have another caller, so let's go ahead and keep this going along. All right, so thanks, Big D.
Yeah, later.
All right, I believe it is PCN Tom. Let's go.
Hello?
Hey, what's up, Tom?
Hey, dude, first off, is it just me, or is that guy that just called in? Did he sound just like that guy that called an Observer Live once and was like, why is Vince McMahon the way that he is? Like, he sounds just like him. He might be the same guy, which I'm marking out for greatly.
Big D he's been calling into shows for a long, long, long time. Long time. I really don't know, man.
I want my butt cheeks autographed for him. But also, dude, Public Enemy, their debut, I'm sure you guys are past, because I heard something about, like, Dave Finley, and that's, like, March. But,
No. We haven't gotten there yet. When do they debut?
They debuted, it's like the Nitro right before the Clash of the Champions that month. January of 96.
Yeah, we just got to the beginning of January of 96, literally. Uh-huh. So, I mean, let us go through that real fast. I mean, we'll get to the first couple of weeks.
I've got like 2 minutes left on the line, and then I got to go upstairs and, you know, have sex with my fiance.
Of course. All right, so go ahead and talk about that match real fast.
Dude, okay, so seriously, the match itself probably sucked. I haven't really, like, watched it since then. But, like, okay, I'm 8 years old, and I've, like, not seen ECW. My only exposure, like you, Mikey, was the aftermatch, you know? And then, you know, next week Public Enemy's on the show, and I'm like, wow, awesome. And then they come out, and they're white. And, see, that blew my mind, because they were always pictured in the aftermatch with the gangsters. And I always thought that the white guys were the gangsters and the black guys were Public Enemy. So that, like, blew my mind immediately. And then they did the double table spot, and it was like, whoa, because the Fabulous only did one table, and I was like, my mind was blown at that time, but then they stacked two of them, and they put Bagwell in between the tables, so it wasn't just like he went through both, like one of them went through his spleen, and it was awesome. It was so awesome, and then they did nothing. So yeah, I just wanted to make sure that got props, because that was like the best debut ever. Like actually one of the three best, the other two being Tajiri's debut in like 2001 in the WWF, and the SWAT team's debut in like 89 in the NWA when you had like all the managers around the ring and you had Sting on commentary. I'm like, whoa, where'd these guys come from? But yeah, that was fucking awesome. I'm going to go upstairs and have sex. You guys have an awesome night.
All right, take care, man.
I don't really feel like a nerd. I'm sitting here talking wrestling on the radio and somebody else is going upstairs to have sex.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, what can you do? We're still pretty cool, Couture.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I'm too cool for school. I know that.
All right, so the first Nitro of the year is, I think it's the first of the year, actually. They had Randy Savage against Arn Anderson. And he beat Arn Anderson, of course. You know, no big shock there. But Eric Bischoff's on commentary. He announces that the Smoking Guns win the Raw Bowl because they taped it the week before.
Yeah.
Like, there was anybody going to change the channel anyways. Who gave a shit about the Raw Bowl? So, yeah you know, what?
Oh, it was New Year's Day. Might not have been too many people watching.
Yeah, maybe not. Lord Steven Regal, he has this, I believe it was actually this show when he debuts this new, I believe it was like a Saturday night or something. He won this butler in a poker match. His name was Jeeves, and so now he has a butler that he won in a poker match for some reason to serve him. Apparently the guy doesn't get paid and he's a slave, but, so he goes out with Regal. And he does nothing, really. He's just like a manservant that comes out with him. And then
I just like Dusty Rhodes calling him Chavs all the time. Like
he
called him Chavs, and he called Bobby Eaton the Earl of Bob.
Yeah, the Earl of Bob, which is so great. And then in this match, Bischoff announced again that the Smoking Guns won the Royal Bowl. Like, this is big news for him, you know. They had an interview, Mean Gene, with Benoit, Pillman, and Arn Anderson. And Pillman was kind of doing, you know, the crazy storyline that he's, you know, eventually known for.
He was flipping out on them because they lost.
Because they lost their matches. So he's doing the loose cannon gimmick, and it was amazing from the very beginning. If people think that it wasn't, it really was. It really was, and it was just
Because I didn't know what was going on at the time. I mean, I just thought this dude flipped out for real. I mean, if they did this gimmick today, you know, he's just doing his work shoot bullshit. You know, I wouldn't even care. But I'd never seen anything like this back then, so I was into it.
And Arn Anderson, like, warned Brian Pillman, because Brian Pillman was starting fights with the Dungeons of Doom. And Arn Anderson was kind of saying, like, look, you know, we don't mess with these guys. They're not our enemies. So you don't need to start fights with these people. And, you know,
Will you show Benoit Pillman lost still... this match?
What?
Will you show Benoit lost this match? Because I would.
This match against Regal?
Yeah.
I was until Pillman came out and it made sense. I mean, they couldn't have said, wow, you lost a bunch of matches if, you know, he had just won. So, I mean, for him losing to Regal, it didn't hurt him at all because Regal's fine. You know, he's a good wrestler. And then this storyline was so much better than him randomly beating Regal, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, that's just my opinion.
This was like the start of the storylines where everybody's in the super group, but you always got people arguing.
This was kind of
like when that started.
The infighting. There was a bunch of infighting. And then Kevin Sullivan and the Giant, the Zodiac, they all come out and they all want to fight the Horsemen, you know, because the Horsemen are Pillman shit talking. So, I mean, I was really into this. I was really excited about the two, because I always loved when the heels would want to fight each other, because I thought it was awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's better than the baby faces, because, I don't know, sometimes the baby faces, not much heat there, but there's a lot of heat here.
Yes, there's tons and tons, and it's great. I mean, I'm dead serious. I have goosebumps right now just even thinking about it, because it's so awesome. Sting and Luger, who's still friends, they beat the Super Assassins, which the Super Assassins are the Warlord and the Barbarian. And the Warlord, he only worked this gimmick for a while because he ends up getting in an accident, right? Wasn't this around this time?
Did he get hit by a milk truck or something? A milk truck?
No, it was a Pizza Hut. A Pizza Hut driver. Yes, the story of the Warlord, if you guys are wondering whatever happened to him, he got hit by a Pizza Hut delivery driver. And then sued Pizza Hut for ending his wrestling career. And I think he won. So,
I don't recall him ever wrestling again.
Yes. So, the Warlord and the Barbarian lose to Sting and Luger. And Bobby Heenan was saying that in this match that Colonel Parker was going to propose on Saturday night to Sister Sherry, which is we haven't really talked about on the show, but the Sister Sherry Colonel Parker, you know, mid card romance that's going on.
Yeah,
some of these interviews and stuff were just so great. I mean, they're so great and they're so funny because like when Contreras had said last week, you know, the whole Southern gentleman thing. That's really exactly what it was. It was just like he was a Southern gentleman that really liked Sister Sherry, and he wanted to be with her, and he would always, you know, like, he would sweat when he was around her, and so it was so funny. And They had Hogan and Ric Flair. And, it, like, once again, when you say, like, you can't believe they're giving away these matches on free TV, I mean, it was New Year's Day, and no one was going to watch it anyways. You know what I mean? There's football games, and it's been that way forever. There's always going to be the big bowl games on New Year's Day. And they, for some reason, I mean, I guess it was because it was at night, but they really thought this Raw Bowl was something to contend with, because WWE never announced anything, really, you know? And they hyped up this Raw Bowl. And so they wanted to put their best foot forward. And so they gave away Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan for the title for free on Nitro to go get the Raw Bowl with a bunch of jobber tag teams in there. And
they kept talking about the Raw Bowl, like, it's like you're giving away results just like for the sake of giving them away, you know, just to do it. You got no real reason.
I honestly believe that they thought it was a threat. I really do, because look at this call, look at the show. It was a really good show.
Yeah.
And the giant comes out, and Arn Anderson and Benoit and Tillman come out, and they go after the giant, and then Randy Savage comes out, and, you know, while they're trying to go after Hogan, and then the Zodiac comes out because the giant's leaving, and the giant wants to come back in the ring to maybe help. I think he's trying to help Hogan, right?
No, the giant was going back, trying to get back in the ring, just I think to go after Hogan some more, and the Zodiac came out, and I think this was kind of the start of his face turn into the Booty Man, because he kept calling Hogan friend, and then say it hurt, and then friend, and then hurt, and then friend, and like, you know, you couldn't really. It was just like the yes-no thing, but this was kind of the start of his babyface turn.
But there was, I think it was in 96, there was a storyline, it's probably coming soon, but where they did like a teased giant face turn.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they changed their mind the next week, right?
Yeah, because you remember, I think it was on a Saturday night, Luger wasn't going to be able to be in the match, and so the giant came out and said, "I'll be in the match with you," and Sting said, "Okay," and it was against Harlem Heaton, and they got in the ring, and giant immediately turned on him. And I don't know, I'm still confused about this. I don't know what this was supposed to be. Probably a case of them wanting to do something and then changing their minds.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's just one of those, you know, one of those things. All right. Luger and Sting are, like, Luger wants Sting to team up with him at the Clash of the Champions, and he wants to prove that he's with Sting, he's aligned with Sting, he wants to prove that to Sting, so Sting agrees to be his tag team partner for the Clash. That's how this Nitro starts. Benoit beats Alex Wright. And Bischoff, like, this is where Bischoff was going from giving way to results to really getting dirty. And, like, I can now see why he got sued for some of the things that he was doing at the time. Like, you know, he made a comment about how WWF raised their prices, $5. And get this, okay? Get this good one. During the Guerrero-Regal match, He called the Royal Rumble the Royal Fumble. That is some heated words that Bischoff made about the WWF. And
you know, doing that like one time a show, saying something, that's fine. But when you keep doing it, you know, like in two consecutive segments, it's like you just got no shame. You know what I mean?
Seriously, it was. And another thing that, on these Nitros, Mongo McMichael, who's the announcer, they did like this four-part interview with Mike Ditka. on Nitro, their biggest show, Mike Ditka was the coach of the Chicago Bears, and Mongo McMichael obviously was a Chicago Bear, and they were obviously teasing about this match that would eventually happen with Mongo eventually getting in the ring, but he's just an announcer at the time. But they keep doing these interviews with Mike Ditka, and it was like some of the most boring television that WCW ever put out, in my opinion. It was just so boring. And, obviously, from my area, like the Bears, but, it's a wrestling show, and I want to watch wrestling, and it was not good stuff.
Yeah.
I
was never a fan of, football or anything, so I could do without all this.
Yes, yes. Hogan and Randy Savage beat Flair and Arn Anderson, and, of course, it's always Hogan beating Arn Anderson, it seems like. Everybody comes out and goes after Hogan and Savage. So now it seems like the Horsemen and the Dungeon Doom are aligned against Hogan and against Randy Savage. And then, once again, the Zodiac, doing his, in the midst of his face turn, he stops the Giant from doing any more damage to them. And,
I just like the idea that he could physically stop the Giant from doing something.
Yes. Yes, but I mean, my whole thing was, him and the Giant, got along always, it seemed like. So he kind of had some sort of, not necessarily mind control or anything, but, whatever. All right. Randy Savage loses to Lex Luger again via knockout. And it was during the match that he loses, mind you. It's announced that he gets a title shot the next week. So, one of those, it's like one of those things that they always will announce on it, and then the guy loses. So, and this was that Public Enemy debut that Tom called about before. The Double Tables, they beat Mark Bagwell, Scotty Riggs. What a great debut. And it was like one of those WCW, they signed these guys, and it's a big deal to the people in the wrestling industry, the insider industry. But did you know who they were?
Just from reading the magazines, the aftermags.
So that's it, really?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I knew who they were when they made their debut because I've been reading the aftermags, and they were always in there talking about when they covered ECW and stuff like that. So,
okay, what's next?
Ric Flair pinned Sting with the figure four in 12 minutes. Luger came out and to pull hard off the apron. Sting knocked himself out with a stinger splash in the corner and hit his head on Hart's megaphone as Luger and Hart were arguing near the corner. So it kind of keeps that going because you don't know if Luger meant to do it or if it was just an accident.
And I love this whole teasing because the whole teasing of it was awesome. You didn't know. You didn't know if Luger was a heel, a full-on heel, or if he was with Sting or, it's they continue to tease it. And Hogan, who's the worst fucking actor in the world, always trying to convince Sting that, Luger's bad. But Hogan and Savage, they have their own issues with the entire Dungeons of Doom and the entire Four Horsemen. And they announced that Hogan and Savage are going to go against Ric Flair and the Giant. And then Hogan immediately goes into Hogan mode and says that he's pissed off about Randy Savage getting a title shot before him. Which, hey,
it makes sense that he even brings up Savage lost his match.
Yes, exactly. Even storyline Hogan was a fucking dipshit. I mean, just, oh, gosh, it bothered me. And then Ming, who's so great, loses to Hogan in about 5 minutes, and Ming is going to try cheating, but Hogan takes his weapon away from him and hits him with his own spike. So, I don't know. It's just... like, everything at Nitro is so great with the exception of the Hogan stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So, Clash of the Champions. And Clash of the Champions is... It was on a Tuesday. And there was a Nitro the night before where Conan, who was just in ECW, debuts in WCW. And this is kind of a big deal for WCW because Conan, when he came in, brought with him some like luchadors. And it was like the luchador became like a big part of WCW. It was a really big part. And, you know, everybody thinks of the luchadors that would eventually come to WCW. I mean, eventually there was fucking 20 of them. But, I mean, This was kind of a big deal. This was kind of a big deal. So we had that, and the night before the Clash of the Champions, okay, same city that the Clash of the Champions, which is a way bigger show than Nitro, which it didn't make any sense to me anyways why they even fucking had a Clash of the Champions, because the only ratings they really cared about were for Nitro. So
yeah, and you got a lot of show every Monday, so what's the point?
Yes, Clash of Champions, like back in the early 90s, was great because it was special. It was a special thing to have. And because it was a live show, and WCW didn't do a lot of live shows, and they it was almost like a light pay-per-view, you know? Like, they would have bigger matches, and not like pay-per-view matches, but, you know, like good mid-card matches, and there would be no real jobbers on those shows. So, but the Clash 96, you know, there's nothing really to get excited about. And so Conan, he's in WCW now. Randy Savage beat Ric Flair for the title. and it was on Nitro, not on The Clash. It was on Nitro.
Yeah.
And this was the first time, like, that they actually changed the world title on a Nitro. And it was the first time that they ever did that on any real, like, Monday night show. I mean, WWF would never do anything like that. I mean, they would now, but they would never do that back then. So this was a really big deal. It really was. It was crazy that, you know, that would even happen. And then it was also the debut of a woman who was just in ECW, Nancy Benoit, eventually, comes back in to WCW. Because even though she's married to Kevin Sullivan at the time, she was in ECW, and Kevin Sullivan was back in WCW for a while. So she finally came back about 2 years later after he did. And then Pillman beat Dean Malenko, which Brian Pillman at this time was on fire as a heel. Just on fire, because he's so, like, the whole loose cannon gimmick was just great. I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah, we should also mention real quick that, you know, when Hogan and Savage come out, they like, had all these women. Woman was one of them. Had all these women, like, lined in the aisle. And on this occasion, two of the women, one was Linda Bollea, who's Hulk Hogan's wife, and one was Deborah McMichael, who's Mongo McMichael's wife. So I didn't know this at the time. I paid more attention.
Yeah, we didn't know. Yeah, you didn't know because it was just, you know, no one really knew this stuff at the time. Then Sting and Luger beat Harlem Heat to win the tag titles, which this had no build whatsoever at all. You know,
no.
They've been building up the Clash of the Champions that they're going to team up so Sting can earn Luger's trust. So what do they do the night before the Clash of the Champions? They actually have they have Sting and Luger win the tag titles. And then, I mean, why?
I have no idea why. I mean, this is making. Why would I want to watch the Clash of the Champions after this show? Two titles change hands.
Yes. I mean, what more can you really expect? I mean, what more can you ask for? Because this is great. This is great. And the story of this match, though, which I explained, is Sting's obviously a babyface, doesn't cheat. But Jimmy Hart comes out and hands Luger a roll of quarters to attack one of the Harlem Heat with. So he does, and, you know, cheats and wins the title. And Sting doesn't know anything about it at the time. And we have Hogan. He beat the one-man gang, the U.S. champion, in a non-title match. So this is Hulk Hogan, who has so much stroke in WCW, and he can't get a title match with the one-man gang? Why? And notice that we haven't mentioned the one-man gang in a long time. The U.S. champion's never on TV. Why?
Yeah.
Why? Oh, just stupid. All right. So the next night, same building, Clash of Champions, Las Vegas. The Nasty Boys and the Public Enemy come out for a match, and it wasn't going to be a no DQ match like you'd expect that you'd eventually see, but you could tell that, like, this feud is going to be interesting at least. The Nasties and the Public Enemy they were like built to be against each other. I mean, honestly, they were so great.
Yeah,
and then,
I love the best spot in this match is when I think one of the Nasties just has a table in the ring, and like Johnny Grund is standing on the floor. So he just drops his table right on his head. And it was like one of the best spots I've ever seen.
One of the best things about the Public Enemy and Nasty Boys matches was they did not try to protect each other at all. They beat the shit out of each other. It was great television.
To be honest, none of them probably knew how to protect each other.
No. And then a rematch from a Saturday night match. There was a Dean Malenko versus Alex Wright match on Saturday night where Dean Malenko beat Alex Wright but then refused to break the Texas Cloverleaf. So he was just a rematch from Saturday night. So they put nothing into this Clash of Champions. Even though they had been building it forever, they put way more into the Nitro before, as you clearly see.
Yeah.
Kevin Sullivan wrestled the Disco Inferno. And
I was supposed to.
Yes, he was supposed to. I mean, like, it was a forfeit because Disco Inferno was going to be singing at the Colonel Robert Parker wedding. So,
I remember in this one, instead, like, an Elvis impersonator came out and Kevin Sullivan beat him up. I just remember he was the Elvis impersonator was eating, like, a peanut butter and banana sandwich. Like Elvis always used to eat.
And this was another Russell Crap moment, if you will, coming up after this. Brian Pillman's wrestling Eddie Guerrero.
I'd say this was more Botchamania.
I guess it's Botchamania. Sure, we'll call it that. Where Brian Pillman comes around, the announcers are on ringside. They're right next to the ring, and Brian Pillman grabs Bobby the Brain Heenan's coat or whatever jacket that he's wearing, and Bobby Heenan on national TV, which it has like a, you know, they didn't really have ratings then, did they?
Did they what?
They didn't have, like, cable ratings at the time. But, I mean, like, it was a wrestling show aimed at, you know, young adults and kids even. And Bobby Heenan says, "What the fuck are you doing?" And then he walks away. He walks away, walks a mile, and then eventually comes back. And then apologizes for what he said.
Yeah, he didn't know what was going on. He was one of those guys. I mean, he had, like, serious neck problems, so he didn't know what was going on. He thought it was a fan or somebody, so he just stands up and says, "What the fuck are you doing?" And then, he walks halfway down the aisle and comes back and says, "I want to apologize. I said something I shouldn't have on TV, but so I want to apologize for it." And then they went from there. This was cool. I'd never seen nothing like that.
Yeah, it was cool.
Pillman was doing, because he did a promo on the show, still one of my favorite lines from any promo of, you know, like all time. He's talking about, "Hey, you're going to respect me and you respect the horsemen, He says, you're going to respect us even if I got to cut all your thumbs off to do it. So, you know, so he'd just be left with, like, four fingers. And he holds up the Four Horsemen sign.
Yeah.
That was pretty damn cool.
It really was cool. And BR26 in the chat said that they did not have cable ratings then, so thank you. Sting and Luger, the new tag team champions on the Nitro before, the big show, instead of a rematch, would you think, you know, they'd have a rematch with the tag title? Nope. They defend against Lord Regal and Earl of Bob Eaton. And
you couldn't have waited until the Clash to have the title match? I mean, really?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, no, because the Clash wasn't against Monday Night Raw. So all they cared about was the ratings. That's really all they cared about.
Yeah.
And Conan, who's billed as WCW was really famous for this. Whenever someone from another country comes in, they would always bill them as the champion of that country. So
yeah.
Conan is the Mexican heavyweight champion. That's it, the Mexican heavyweight champion. Just like, Dave Taylor was like the Great
the European
Britain heavyweight
champion. Yeah, the Great
yeah.
Britain
yes.
heavyweight
what?
Champion.
Yes, yeah. So.
I couldn't have just said he's the AAA heavyweight champion. That
would
sound
so
much better.
They wouldn't say that. Yes, but the Mexican heavyweight champion, he beat Psicosis debut. You know, fun match. You know, Conan was all right then, you know, before he's badly broken down, you know, within a couple
yeah.
of years. Ric Flair and the Giants, they beat Hogan and Randy Savage. They got thrown in, I think, brass knuckles, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Kevin Green and Hulk Hogan cleared the ring of, you know, Brian Pillman and, like, the other guys, you know. And it's just so funny that, you know, Kevin Green, of course it's him and Hogan, because, you know, anytime there's an outside star, Hogan was a part of that, you know. And that's when Elizabeth came back with, because Flair came back with all those girls, you know. They had all those girls with them. But so Hogan and Savage wanted to show off that they had a girl, too, and it was Elizabeth aligned with them.
Well, actually, all the girls were with Hogan and Savage for a couple of weeks.
Oh, they all were?
Yeah, because they were doing something where they were just, like, you know, just kind of lining the aisles with the women when Hogan and Savage came out. Because you remember a couple of weeks later when a woman turned on Randy Savage.
Yes.
Now let's talk about the wedding.
Yes, let's talk about the wedding.
This was, and like a typical wrestling wedding, it didn't come off as planned.
No.
There's like the Little White Chapel, which is a famous place in Las Vegas where people get married. And apparently Colonel Parker has gambled all his money away. He has no money. You know,
nothing.
He can't pay for like the wedding license and stuff like that. And he asked Gene for a loan. Gene won't loan him anything. And Gene makes his wisecrack about Colonel Parker said, Jerry's in the limo. And Gene says something like, well, she is used to, you know, being in the back seat of cars. And Robert Parker, he just looks at him and says, Gene, what a comment to make. I'm about to marry this woman. Just like in the typical Southern style, and I just died laughing. It was so funny.
Yes.
Then Digital Inferno comes juking in. You know, I made her dance at your wedding, and he's just bebopping along, and everybody's looking at him like he's crazy. And Buck Els Buck and Dick Slater show up. Gene interviews him and Buck Els Buck says something. Hey, where's that witch at? And Gene says, you mean Sherry? Is it the only witch you know? It's the only witch I know. And I got to go back and find this on YouTube. I haven't seen it in so long. I got to go watch it.
Yeah, because Gene made a lot of wisecracks about Sherry over the years.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they had heat or they were just really good friends, you know, that he could make
that's just the way Gene was. Gene was that, like that with a lot of, like, heel managers and stuff like that. You know, he'd just make those wise-ass comments about them all the time.
All right, so the gist of the story is they are so Medusa gets involved, right?
Yeah, she comes out of the trailer when I guess Sherry's there, and she's ready for the ceremony, and Medusa just comes out of the trailer and just attacks her. I think they had reception table set up. You know, they had like wine and stuff like that and punch and
yes.
I think they got all emptied all that all over. She emptied that all over Sherry or something like that. So.
That's so funny. This is so funny.
Road Warriors returned on this show.
Who returned?
The Road Warriors.
Yes, they did.
They came out. Came out for the big promo, saying they were back and they want the championships. And only know it was a Sting and Luger promo. And then the Road Warriors come out and interrupt, and they say they want to shout out the titles. And Sting, you know, he's buddies with them, so he says, "Yeah, I'm all for this. Let's have a match." And Luger says, "You know, they've been out for how long have they been out for? They've been Animal has been retired for 4 years, and he didn't want to get in the ring with Animal because with the torture rack might hurt his back again. They have another serious back injury, and you know, we got all these other top teams lined up for title shots. We got title shots coming up with like the State Patrol and stuff like that. You know, just naming like a bottom tag team." Just to kind of be the heel. So, and you know, the whole thing still adds to the Sting and Luger thing about, you know, Luger's kind of the heel, not much of a babyface at this time, but Sting's full babyface. So they're still playing that up.
and another thing that we should mention was they were, I don't know if they were planning on a comeback for Paul Orndorff, but they played like a video of Orndorff of saying, you know, that he got hurt by the Horsemen. And I believe in the video he said he was coming back, right?
Yeah, I think maybe there was supposed to be a return around this time, and maybe it was his injuries were too bad he couldn't come back. I just remember him, you know, he's telling a story about how tough he is. And, you know, when a big 800-pound gorilla tries to sucker punch you in the dressing room, and you know, then you turn the tables on him, that's a tough man right there. You know,
yes, which is great. And you cannot forget that his inspirational leader, Gary Spivey, was showed in the crowd, you know, ready to cheer on Paul Orndorff.
God.
And, you know, it's just so great. Just, I don't know, it was just great. They had a... a Nitro coming up where they recorded for the main event, you know, the next week, which is really weird to me that they recorded this for the main event and not for Nitro, where Conan beats One Man Gang to win the title. And Conan was already the Mexican heavyweight champion, you know, so he already has, like, the gold, you know.
Well, they had already announced that Conan was getting a U.S. title shot at Super Brawl 6, so they changed the title in the main event. I don't understand this shit. The main event, like, the lowest show on the totem pole.
Yes, it was. I mean, it really was the lowest show. Because, I mean... Like, I would be able to watch shows on Saturday and Sunday mornings because it was in the morning. So
yeah.
Even if you're going to do something, you still have time to watch that and then go on with your day. But no one, you know, very few people are at home at 6 o'clock, you know, on a Sunday. I guess some people are, but you know what I mean. Like, if you're going to go out and do anything, you're going to miss it. Flair beat Hogan because there was a... They stole one of Elizabeth's shoes, and they hit Hogan in the eye with it. So Flair beat Hogan. Which was the first time ever. Hogan was pinned by Ric Flair on Nitro. I think it was the first time he was pinned in WCW.
Yeah, it was the first time he was pinned in WCW.
And there was like this funny thing because like it was at least I've read before, that Hogan was trying to show that, you know, he could do the job. You know, he had no issue being pinned or, you know, as long as it's for, you know, the good of the company or something. So, you know, this is short-lived. The Road Warriors beat Ming and the Barbarian, which Ming and the Barbarian weren't a regular team because Barbarian was teaming up with the Warlord for that, I think it was once or twice. But Ming and Barbarian used to be a team, so this was kind of the beginning of them as a regular team. This was the first time.
I really liked Ming and the Barbarian.
As a team, they were great. They
used to name the
team.
Faces of Fear for this tag team.
Yes, Faces of Fear, they were called. And so, of course, the Road Warriors we're going to go over. And Sherry beat Medusa in about a minute and a half, which, you know, Sherry hadn't wrestled in years and years and years. And during this match, Bischoff said that Medusa is so good that she could have stayed in the WWF and been successful in the men's division, you know, because this is a bunch of geeks over there in the WWF.
Okay, now you just sound stupid saying shit like that.
Yeah, yes, I know. Let's talk about
real quick. This was a couple of weeks before. Remember, they did this big promo with the Horsemen and the Dungeon of Doom, where, you know, they're trying to sell all these differences and stuff anymore, and says we're not scared of you, but we do respect you. And then Pillman, in his little nutty fashion, says, "Yeah, we're the Horsemen. We're not afraid of anybody." And then Anderson turns around and just slaps the shit out of him.
Which is great.
Remember that?
Yes, I do. I do remember that.
That was awesome. And so on this show, he decides he's going to show Pillman some tough love, so he takes his belt off and he's fixing to whip him with his belt. And then for some reason, Sullivan and Hugh Morris jump Arn Anderson, which, I know, if you hate Pillman that much, why not just let him take the lashing? I don't know.
Yeah, it was because, like, it didn't make any sense because they were trying to settle the differences. So then it kind of, like, started a little bit of a war between them. But which is, like, abruptly ends, as you'll see soon. It really, you know, they eventually make a deal. They make a deal with each other. They have the same common goal, you know. So they form an alliance. You will hear all about it very soon. Probably next week, because we only have a couple of minutes left. We'll go ahead and start next week with Super Brawl. So let's just finish with this last Nitro before Super Brawl.
Okay.
All right. Randy Savage beats Benoit because a woman is with Benoit now. And
no, she's with Flair. No, she turned on Savage in this match and then went with Flair.
So it was. Hang on, I'm like really lost in this. I thought she had already turned.
No, she turned in this match with Benoit because she came up from behind Savage and started choking. And so that was her heel turn to go with the Horseman.
Oh wow, yeah, I'm completely lost. I apologize, everybody.
The Chris Benoit thing didn't start until like maybe the end of the summer or something like that.
Oh, I thought she had turned a couple of weeks before. I guess, okay, well, I'm wrong. And so they have Hogan with Elizabeth, and they say that, you know, he's mad about the whole Randy Savage assault. And Flair comes out and beats the crap out of Hogan in the supposedly bad eye that he got hit with a woman's shoe. The WCW, one of the most lethal weapons there are the heel of a woman's shoe, which I guess is a good weapon, you know.
Yeah.
It's such a goofy thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, Savage said that, you know, at Super Brawl, What he would do to Ric Flair, he could not say on TV. And He also questioned Miss Elizabeth because Elizabeth did not warn Hogan on the attack. So,
yeah, so I could see where this is going. I could see where it was going.
Yes. Pillman and Arn wrestle Kevin Sullivan and Hugh Morris. But Hugh Morris had just showed up maybe a month before, if that.
Yeah, I think maybe he was there in December.
Yeah, so it was, he had not been there very long. And, Hugh Morris has talked about how he got into WCW. Kevin Sullivan gave him a call and said, hey, are you still wrestling? Yeah. Are you still fat? Yeah. And then he gave him a job in WCW. So that's awesome. And they announced that Pillman would face Kevin Sullivan in a strap match at Super Brawl. And where the loser would have to say that they respect the other person.
Yeah.
And yes. So we will talk about where that's going next week.
And they battled to the back and they're battling like near the curtains and somebody reached out with a broom and broke it over Orange's back. And then later Orndorff came out to the commentary booth to kind of insinuate that it was him.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is like the last time we ever heard of the Paul Orndorff thing.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. See, Cotrera remembers all the stuff that even I cannot remember. I mean, like, you have the best memory in the history of anything. And they had a match with Sting and Lex Luger. And they announced, like, the matches for Super Bowl, but we'll know that next week. We'll just go through them. But Sting and Lex Luger beat the Road Warriors. And he hit Lex Luger hit Road Warrior Animal in the back with a, what was it, like a...
steel plate?
It wasn't a plate. It was like a little box, wasn't it? I thought it was like this little steel box.
Something like that. I can't really remember.
Yeah, it's like a, it almost looked like a little toolbox or something. And during the match, the building lost power, okay? And it was very, very brief. It was not very long at all. And Bischoff says on commentary that the WWF was behind it. Like, Vince McMahon was in the freaking boiler room, cut the power, and took off. So,
you know, we've been talking about all this WWF stuff that they would say and do, like, each week, and when you talk about it and all group it together, it kind of makes Bischoff look like a fucking loon.
Yeah, it makes him look like an insecure, you know, little baby. And Sting and the Road Warriors, they did an interview with Mean Gene to close the show and said that they wanted the winners of the Sting Luger versus Harlem Heat match at Super Brawl, and they won the match at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So we will see next week what's going on with Super Brawl. And, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff coming up for us to talk about. What can we expect next week? Well, one thing, we'll talk about the whole Brian Pillman thing and what happened. And
one of the worst cage matches of all time next week.
Yes, we'll talk about the worst cage match, and then we'll start. I think we should get to at least the seeds of the NWO, if not the actual NWO debut. So we will get to that very soon, and we only have about a minute left of the show, so we're going to go ahead and just end it here. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks everybody for calling in. We always appreciate you, you know, listening to the show. Don't forget to go to superfriendsuniverse.com to check out our show and check out all the other great shows on that website. So we will be back next week, Tuesday, 8 p.m. Central, of course. And thank you again, Cotrera, for doing the show, as you do every week. So, all right, we will talk to everybody next week. All right, thank you.